Good morning and welcome to my podcast, Storytime with Miss Silverstein, where we talk about any and all things science fiction, horror, and fantasy. If character development, the hero's odyssey, and other thematic critical thinking topics interest you, you, my friend, are in for a treat. This episode is brought to you in part by Anchor. Stay tuned while we take a step back to talk about this amazing platform. And we're back. Thank you for tuning in, one and all. Today we are going to continue our aliens discussion from last week. And what better time to pick up, what better movie to pick apart than the 1979 horror classic Alien. This masterpiece, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Tom Sherritt, Sigourney Weaver, Veronica Cartwright, Harvey Dean Stanton, John Hurt, Ian Holm, and Yaphet Kotto, was inspired by a story written by O'Bannon and Ronald Chessett, which follows a commercial crew space tug Nostromo, who encounters the ever-elusive alien, a deadly, aggressive ET set loose on the ship. It took roughly 20 weeks to complete editing and post-production of Alien. One of my favorite parts in how this film was made is the following. Scott filmed many of the rehearsals to capture spontaneity, improvisation, and tension between cast members to translate a convincing emotional roller coaster when characters in this film. I first watched Alien in college during my sophomore year surrounded by friends. I had heard of this film before and seen references on the internet, and one of my favorite comedies, Spaceballs. When that chestburster popped out and started singing, "Hello, my baby, hello, my darling, hello, my ragtime gal," I just had to find out what was with this singing alien. To my surprise, there just so happened to be a family video down the street from my dorm. So, my friends and I decided to have a family movie night. We dimmed all the lights, got blankets, banded together to pop lots of microwave popcorn, and started the film. I had a friend who was a film major. His name was Ryan. He said basically a lot. As a matter of fact, we teased him for it, and it gave him a laugh every time. But it would always be so neat to watch him gush over movies that we would watch together. Really, anyone who has a passion, it's amazing to witness. The scene opens up with a tense, cosmic image of the Nostromo, slowly traveling through space. Even the title sequence builds a tone of what to expect in this horror film. The audience is slowly given a tour of the ominous ship in all of its spooky glory. If you notice the set design of the ship, it appears to be resemblant of a lifelike craft, which only immerses the viewers even more. We are finally introduced to our protagonist, played by Sigourney Weaver. She is sleeping soundly in some kind of chamber for prolonged travel. She slowly wakes to find the other crew members still sleeping. Now let's imagine for a second that we are in the shoes of Miss Weaver. We had just woken up from a long and deep slumber, most likely disoriented and processing our emotions and thoughts, like, I wonder where we are. I wonder how far our destination is from our location. I should probably eat something since it's been a hot minute, etc., etc., etc. Shortly after she wakes, she opens the rest of the pods to inform the crew that it is time to wake up. All groggy and adjusting to wakefulness, the crew retires to the dining room to discuss their next steps. There's one crew member in particular who is noted to be a bit more unique than the rest, almost robotic in nature. He sits among his comrades as they enjoy their first meal together. I find some of the conversation in this to be quite entertaining, especially since it has a college dorm feel. The team then begins to discuss their mission, which is to explore a spacecraft with missing crew and a destroyed ship. Shh. Shortly after beginning their discussion, the crew receives a mysterious transmission from a nearby moon. In response to this unexpected distress call, the crew collaborates on a plan to take action. Much like any team, each of these seven members has an integral role to play. Warrant Officer Ripley, aka our protagonist, explores the radio transmission sector to decipher the distress call. Meanwhile, Captain Dallas, accompanied by Navigator Lambert and Executive Officer Kane, investigate the transmission from the moon in various parts of the ship. And last but certainly not least, the Nostromo engineers Parker and Brett repair damages to the ship. Once the investigative crew enter the alien ship, they lose communications with the Nostromo. Ripley manages to decode parts of the message, determining it to be a warning, but she is unable to inform the team on the alien ship. Kane approaches a chamber room full of large, egg-like objects. He sees hundreds of them. Now, what if we were Kane in this situation? How would you be able to cope with a revelation this monstrous? I know what I would do. I would hightail it out of there and head back to the Nostromo. No, I'd probably converse with the team to distinguish their thoughts on this crisis. So then Kane decides to touch one. Stupid, right? But, I mean, you can't help it. Curiosity killed the cat. Moments after, a creature leaps out, breaks through his helmet, and makes a cozy home of his face. Yikes. Shocked, Dallas and Lambert scramble to carry their comrade to the Nostromo. It is certainly a struggle to enter their ship with ominous feelings that something bigger and more dangerous lurks in the shadows. Ripley, holding her stance as on-duty senior officer, she refuses to let them on the ship. She gives quarantine guidelines, but Ash overrides her command and lets them enter the Nostromo. At this point, the crew realizes they are not alone on this moon. Let's pause from the plot and take a second look at what observations we have gathered from the current events. There's already a divide forming between each of the team members. Like Scooby-Doo and the gang, they split up pretty much right away. I mean, you gotta cover more ground, of course, but maybe they should have assessed the situation more thoroughly first. Notice, the first team member who has the desire to get answers is our heroine Ripley. She is very much independent, strong, smart, single, and has a passion for keeping those close to her safe. It is not clearly introduced how she became a member of this crew. The only information the viewing audience is given is that she has embarked on a mission in the past and survived, making her the definition of the final girl. Kane, our unfortunate first victim, did not have much of a backstory either. He appears to be a man who knows what he wants and will take it if he has to. The moment the face hugger hatched, you see a shift in Kane's tough exterior that he has not shown before. Fear. For him, it is not a common emotion. Now, reflecting on real life current events, I see some correlations between the crew and our world today. There are times when being in quarantine and social distancing and everything can feel like you're on a spaceship with an unknown creature just stalking you, just waiting for you to be vulnerable. But I would not be a very good podcasting host if I said that there is no hope in this situation. Just like this crew, there is always a glimmer of hope and drive to survive. And I firmly believe that one day we will overcome this monstrous virus. Just like this crew works day and night, every breath and drop of sweat and blood they can take to defeat this enemy, to overcome the mystery that haunts them, that hunts them. If they can do it, so can we. Now let's get back to the plot of our story. Science Officer Ash carefully operates on Kane's face, but pauses when he observes that the alien blood is composed of a strong radioactive acid. The facehugger naturally detaches of its own will and is later found dead. With the Nostromo only partially repaired, the crew sets off to their original mission of landing on the vacant abandoned spaceship. Eventually, Kane awakes with minor memory loss, but otherwise no alarming injuries. At the Last Supper, when the entire crew shares a meal together as one team, before Kane returns to a balanced health, he begins choking and convulsing. Suddenly, a small alien bursts from his chest, killing him instantly. The chest burster then retreats into the ship. Scrambling for the legendary green tracking devices, the crew, hell-bent on avenging Kane and surviving in the process, the crew tries their hardest to locate the chest burster. And along the way, locating some awesome weapons. I mean, we're talking flamethrowers, guns, you name it. Following the crew's cat, Jones, Brett, one of the engineers, finds a landing leg compartment where the now fully grown alien attacks Brett and vanishes with his corpse. Now, this alien has grown pretty darn fast. In just three scenes, this alien has gone from a facehugger to a chestburster to a xenomorph. Now, personally, I think the xenomorph design is really cool. I don't know how they came up with the ideas for his appearance, but I've always been a fan. I'm actually recalling a movie my dad and I watched as a child, Alien vs. Predator. I suppose I have seen an alien movie of sorts. And when those two intergalactic enemies fought, I got so excited. You just don't see many films like that. And Ridley Scott just has a way of storytelling that not many horror science fiction Lovecraftian themed films can do. He masterfully immerses his audience all the while, beginning to help you believe that something like this could exist. I mean, can you imagine being Brett in this situation? He's following this adorable cat to Lord knows where, and the cat scurries off. And all of a sudden, you hear this low rumbling growl with the saliva just coming down from the ceiling. And he looks up, and this big scorpion-like tail stabs him and pulls him up to the ceiling. That would be a very quick death, at least, but I could not imagine seeing something like that in real life. And again, like I said before, it's really neat because most of these jump scares in this film are genuine. A lot of these actors had no idea what this xenomorph looked like, so when they saw it, they were actually scared. So if you haven't watched Alien, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I actually am going off of memory and research. I haven't watched Alien since, oh gosh, probably last Halloween. So this is just how much I love this movie. And a great friend of mine recommended I do the episode based off of this. So thank you, dear friend. And let's go ahead and get back to our story. Disclaimer, for those of you who have not had the pleasure of seeing this wonderful film and do not want to be spoiled any further, go ahead and exit out of the episode now. I would like to thank you, wonderful alien virgins, for listening, and tune in next week for our next episode series about, drumroll, ghosts.
Okay, now for all of you seasoned alien fans, let's continue. After a heated debate, the remaining crew of six decide that the alien must travel through the ventilation system. Dallas goes inside the ducts with the intention of luring the xenomorph out, but the cunning alien ambushes him and kills him instantly. Pleading with the remaining team of four to leave the ship and escape in a small shuttle, but Ripley, now in charge, leads by stating it simply won't support four people and recommends they continue the plan of flushing it out. Now, with access to Mother, which is the computer program of the ship, Ripley discovers one terrifying secret: that Ash has been secretly given orders from the company who arranged this mission to bring the xenomorph back to Earth, and if need be, the crew could be replaceable. Bum bum bum. Once Ripley learns of this information, Ash tries to choke her to death. Quick to intervene, Parker, the only remaining engineer, knocked Ash's head loose, revealing him to be an android. His head is reconnected, and then they learned he is an important part of the alien's survival. He explains the love for this xenomorph's psychology, unhinged by morals or conscience, and scoffs at their chance of survival. Ripley heard enough and cut off his power, and as they left, Parker burned him alive. The remaining crew decides to self-destruct the Nostromo. With little options left, Ripley treks towards the shuttle. She escapes. She barely escapes as the Nostromo explodes. Parker and Lambert are killed by the xenomorph as they gather supplies for the ship. As Ripley prepares for hypersleep, she finds that the alien is on the ship with her. Like, what? Ripley quickly throws on a spacesuit and uses a gallon of gasoline to flush the xenomorph out. It approaches Ripley, but just before it strikes, she opens the airlock door, nearly blowing the alien into space. It manages to grab onto the narrow ledge. Ripley blasts it with a grappling hook, but the shot catches as the airlock closes, tethering it to the shuttle. The xenomorph pulls itself to the engine exhaust, but Ripley fires the engines, blasting the alien away. After logging her final entry, she puts Jones the cat and herself into hypersleep for the trip home. So, Earthlings, what can we conclude from this film? To follow your gut whenever there is a space shuttle and an expert-level stealthy xenomorph on the prowl. Thank you so much for joining me on this space expedition, and enjoy the rest of your week. Be sure to tune in next Monday for our episode on ghosts. Until next time, bye-bye.